Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. We are diving into a Supreme Court case this time that really kind of shook things up when it comes to the criminal justice world. Utah v. Streiff.
Yeah, it's one of those cases that I think really makes you stop and think about, you know, the Fourth Amendment, the whole idea of unreasonable searches and seizures.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, obviously the police can't just, you know, stop and search whoever they want on the street.
Yeah.
But what happens when they do make an illegal stop and then they find something illegal?
Yeah.
You know what happens then?
That's exactly what this case is all about. Utah v. Streiff kind of throws a wrench in the whole concept of the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that if evidence is obtained illegally, it can't be used in court.
Right, right. But... Okay, so let's set the scene here. So back in 2006, there was a detective in Salt Lake City, Officer Fackrell. And he was looking into some potential drug activity that was happening at a house. He was staking it out for about a week and saw, you know, people coming and going on these really short visits, which made him suspicious.
Yeah, classic detective work up to that point. But here's where things get a little bit messy. So Edward Streiff, he leaves the house and Officer Fackrell stops him in a parking lot nearby, asks him for his ID. And get this. Even the prosecutor in the case later admitted that the officer didn't really have a good reason to stop Streiff. It was a straight-up unlawful stop.
So the officer was basically just like, hey, hold on a second, with no real justification.
Yeah, essentially. It was a violation of the Fourth Amendment right from the start. You would think that anything they found after that would be thrown out right. I mean, that's the whole idea behind the exclusionary rule, to stop police from, you know, just violating people's rights.
Yeah, that seems pretty clear-cut to me. Bad stop means any evidence is off limits.
You would think so. And at first, the Utah Supreme Court actually agreed. They suppressed the evidence based on that fruit of the poisonous tree idea. They said it was all tainted by that initial bad stop.
Okay. But then the case goes up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they see things differently.
They did. This is where things get legally complicated. See, when Officer Fackrell ran Streiff's ID through the system, he found out that Streiff had a warrant out for his arrest. A traffic violation, actually.
Oh, so they arrested him for the warrant.
Yep. And during the search that they did after the arrest, they found meth on Streiff and some drug paraphernalia, too.
Wait a minute. So they used that initial stop, which we already said was illegal, to find the warrant, which then gave them a reason to search him and find the drugs. I mean, how does that even work?
That's the big question, isn't it? The Supreme Court ultimately decided that the warrant was what they called an intervening circumstance, something that broke the chain of events between the bad stop and the drugs being found.
So they're saying because there was a warrant, poof, the illegal stop doesn't matter anymore.
Mm.
Not sure I'm following the logic here.
It is a little tricky. The majority opinion focused on what's called the attenuation doctrine. The basic idea is that if enough stuff happens between the illegal action and the evidence being found, the connection gets weak enough that the evidence is okay to use.
Okay, so can you maybe give me an example? Like, how would that work outside of this particular case?
Sure. So let's say the police illegally search your car, right? And during the search, they find a receipt for a storage unit. Then they use that receipt to get a warrant to search the storage unit. And inside, they find a bunch of stolen goods. Now, because of the attenuation doctrine, the stolen goods might be allowed as evidence, even though that first car search was illegal, because the warrant for the storage unit kind of creates a separation.
Okay, I see what you mean. That actually clarifies it a bit. So back to Streiff then. The Supreme Court was essentially saying that because there was a warrant that was already out there, a totally separate thing, it didn't really matter that the stop in the first place was a no-go.
Yeah, you got it. They emphasized that once that warrant popped up, the officer had a duty to arrest Streiff. But here's the thing. The justices who disagreed with the majority in this case, they had some pretty serious concerns about what this would mean going forward.
What kind of concerns?
Well, Justice Sotomayor, for example, she argued that this whole ruling could basically open the door for police to just randomly stop people hoping they'll find a warrant for something, because then they'd have a reason to search them.
And wouldn't that be a huge issue? I mean, there's so many warrants out there for all sorts of minor things. It seems like it would be way too easy to target certain people.
Exactly. Justice Sotomayor was really concerned about that. And she also pointed out that this type of ruling could end up really disproportionately impacting people of color who are already more likely to be stopped by police in the first place.
That's kind of disturbing when you think about it. It's like this case goes way beyond just some legal technicality, it raises some serious questions about racial profiling and whether people can trust law enforcement.
For sure. Utah v. Streiff really makes you think about this whole balance between how much power the police have and what our individual rights actually are.
Yeah, it sounds like the Supreme Court was trying to walk a very fine line here, trying to uphold the Fourth Amendment, but also give law enforcement some flexibility.
It's a tough issue. There are no simple answers. But I think understanding both sides of the argument in this case is super important for anyone who wants to understand the Fourth Amendment and how it actually plays out in the real world.
Okay, so we've set the stage. We've met the main players in this legal drama. Now, let's dig a little deeper into the majority's reasoning here. They actually use a specific test to justify their decision, right?
That's right. They relied on a three-factor test that was established in a previous case, Brown v. Illinois. It helps figure out if the connection between what the police did wrong and the evidence is weak enough to allow the evidence to be used.
Okay, so let's break down this test a bit. Tell me more about these three factors.
All right, so the three factors are temporal proximity, intervening circumstances, and the purpose and flagrancy of the police misconduct.
Okay, so let's break them down one by one. What's this temporal proximity all about?
So temporal proximity basically means how close together the illegal thing the police did and finding the evidence were in time, like how much time passed between the two. In Streiff's case, the stop and the search happened pretty much right after each other, so that factor would actually point toward getting the evidence thrown out.
Right, but then the second factor, those intervening circumstances, that's where the whole warrant thing really changed the game, right?
Exactly. The majority opinion really leaned on that warrant that was already out there. They said it was a totally separate issue. It had nothing to do with the stop itself. And because of that warrant, Officer Fackrell had to make the arrest.
So the warrant basically made the illegal stop go away in their eyes.
Yeah, you could say that. They saw it as breaking the chain of events, so finding the drugs was legal, even if that first stop wasn't.
Okay. What about the third factor, then? The officer's intent. I mean, didn't the dissent say that this whole stop was just a way to try to find some kind of evidence?
Yeah, Justice Sotomayor was pretty vocal about that. She argued that this ruling could encourage police to make these bad stops on purpose, thinking, well, maybe I'll find a warrant and then it'll all be okay.
So she's saying the officer shouldn't get off easy just because a warrant showed up later.
Exactly. But the majority opinion, they kind of downplayed the officer's actions. They said it was at most negligent. Not like he was intentionally trying to violate Streiff's rights.
Wait, so they're saying it was just an honest mistake? I mean, come on. The prosecutor even said there wasn't a good reason for the stop in the first place.
It's definitely a point of disagreement. The dissenting justices, they felt strongly that the majority was letting the officer get away with something he shouldn't have.
It seems like this whole case really comes down to how much importance you give to that warrant. If you see it as totally unrelated to the illegal stop, then the outcome makes sense. But if you think the police could use it as an excuse to get around the rules, then it gets a lot more complicated.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's the whole debate that Utah v. Streiff kicked off, and it's still going on today.
It's wild how something that seems like a pretty simple case, a bad stop, can lead to such big questions about the Fourth Amendment and what the police are allowed to do.
It really shows how complicated these issues are. It's not always black and white. There's a lot of gray area when you're trying to figure out how the Constitution actually works in real life situations.
So where does that leave us then? What kind of impact did Utah v. Streiff have in the long run? Did it make the Fourth Amendment weaker?
That's a tough question. I mean, the Streiff decision didn't completely throw out the Fourth Amendment or the exclusionary rule, but it did create this situation where there can be exceptions, and that has a lot of people worried.
Like they created a crack in the system, and now everyone's wondering how big that crack is going to get.
Exactly. And that's actually what we're going to be looking at next, how Utah v. Streiff has been used in cases that came after it, and what it could mean for policing and the Fourth Amendment in the future.
All right, let's get into it. I want to see how this legal precedent is playing out on the streets. So we've talked about how Utah v. Streiff could be misused, but has that actually happened? Are there any real-world examples?
Yeah, there have actually been a bunch of cases where Streiff has been cited, and some of them are definitely a little worrisome. One that really stands out is United States v. Henderson. This one was in the Sixth Circuit.
Okay, Henderson. What happened there?
So in that case, the police got an anonymous tip that there was drug activity going on at a house, but the tip itself wasn't enough to get a warrant to search the place. But the officers, they decided to stake out the house anyway.
Okay. Starting to sound familiar. Did they stop someone coming out of the house, like in Streif?
You know it. They saw a guy, Henderson, leaving the house carrying a backpack, and they stopped him, asked for his ID, and yep, ran a warrant check.
I think I see where this is going. Did he have a warrant?
Ding, ding, ding. Turns out Henderson had a warrant out for a probation violation. So they arrested him based on the warrant, and then they searched his backpack. And guess what? They found a gun and drugs.
So the Sixth Circuit said the search was okay because of Streif.
That's right. They said that the warrant, just like in Streif, was this intervening circumstance that made the connection between the stop and finding the evidence disappear.
But hold on, didn't Henderson's lawyers try to fight that? It sounds like the police were looking for any excuse to stop him.
Oh, they definitely did. The defense argued that the police were basically using the idea that they might find a warrant as a reason to stop anyone leaving that house, especially since they know that outstanding warrants are pretty common, especially in certain neighborhoods.
So basically, they were saying the police were using Streif as a cover for what they call a pretextual stop.
Exactly. A pretextual stop is when the police use some minor thing, like a broken taillight, as a reason to stop someone, when what they really want to do is investigate something else that they don't have a good reason for.
That seems like a dangerous game. If the police can stop anybody they want, hoping they'll find a warrant, isn't that a huge problem for the Fourth Amendment?
That's the big concern. It's something the dissenting justices in Streif talked about too. But in the Henderson case, the Sixth Circuit ended up agreeing with the lower court's decision. They said using the warrant was okay under the Streif rule.
So even though that first stop was questionable, the warrant basically gave the police permission to search Henderson and his stuff.
Pretty much. And Henderson isn't the only one. There have been other cases where they've used Streif the same way, which makes some legal experts worry that this decision is being used to justify these pretextual stops and weaken the Fourth Amendment.
It sounds like Utah v. Streif has created a lot of confusion and opened the door for a lot of legal battles. Have there been any cases that have pushed back against this?
There have been some cases where courts have said the facts were different from Streif and decided to throw out the evidence. It really comes down to the specifics of the case and how they use that three-factor test.
So it sounds like we're kind of in this weird in-between place legally where courts are trying to figure out how to use Streif without totally messing up the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Utah v. Streif has definitely made things a lot more complicated when it comes to the exclusionary rule and what the police are allowed to do.
So what does this all mean for the average person out there? If you're stopped by the police, what should you do knowing that this precedent exists?
It's more important now than ever to know your rights. If you get stopped, remember you have the right to stay quiet and you have the right to a lawyer. Don't let them search anything without talking to a lawyer first.
And it's really important to document what happens. If you can write down everything that happened, the officer's name and badge number, the time and place of the stop, if there were any witnesses, all of that.
Right. And if you think your rights were violated, get in touch with a legal organization like the ACLU or find a lawyer who specializes in Fourth Amendment cases. Cases like Utah v. Streif really show how complicated the legal system can be and how important it is to stand up for your rights.
Well, this deep dive into Utah v. Streif has been really eye-opening. It's clear that this case is still having a big impact on how the police operate and how we understand the Fourth Amendment.
It's a case that makes us think about some really big questions about individual freedom versus public safety, and it's a conversation that we need to keep having as a society.
Well, thank you so much for breaking down all of this for us. I think our listeners would agree that we've all learned a lot about the Fourth Amendment and the implications of Utah v. Streif.
It's been my pleasure. I hope everyone listening will keep thinking about these issues and keep talking about the role of law enforcement in our communities.
And on that note, that wraps up our deep dive for today. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and keep those brains working.